So for the next about 20 minutes, I'm going to talk about a little bit on how I've experienced creating these businesses from ground up, and some of the views and thoughts that have formed during the years of trying, failing, and occasionally succeeding. I started building startup businesses, some of them global, some of them local, about 12 years ago or so. Here are some of them. Some are quite well known, others are very much unknown, and some are not in existence anymore. They have died off, as these kind of companies often do. These are one of the most well-known companies of the bunch, IRC Galleria being the local Facebook for teenagers in this country. Muxlim is a company here in Espoo doing social media for Muslims globally, awarded by the President of Finland with an internationalization award. Doppler was a company acquired by Nokia, and our business was to provide a social service for active world travelers, business travelers. Stardoll is a Finnish initiated business that's the world leader in dressing up, making up virtual paper dolls. And it's used by more than 100 million teenagers all over the world. Brain Alliance is the company that I currently work for. We are listed in the Nasdaq OMX stock exchange, and I'm the company chief operating officer at the moment. We do media systems for media companies primarily. And Applifier is another young startup company that quite fastly about 1.5 years ago started and almost immediately became a global leader in Facebook application advertising, creating an advertising network that nowadays reaches about 200 million consumers. Altogether throughout the years, I founded a bunch of companies, went through 11 rounds of funding, done one bankruptcy and two other honest failures. And this is all very rewarding in a sense that you, obviously, when you are so active, you learn a lot in the way. And many of these experiences that we heard about, Born Globals not getting the funding and being frustrated with the huge challenges that they are faced, that's kind of the everyday life of a startup entrepreneur in this country. What I've learned is that the pace of change is certainly not slowing down, that these companies have to live in a very quickly paced world themselves, but also the society around them, the business environment around them is constantly changing faster and faster. And that means that the entire team of people who works for the company have to be very capable of adapting into change, accepting change, embracing it, and living with change. And sometimes it resembles this kind of situation where you are really leading an expedition down the mountainside. And the only thing that you have for certain is some of the people and some of the equipment that you are carrying with you, but all the other components can suddenly change around you. There might be a snowstorm coming, there might be somebody injuring his leg on the way down, and you have to cope with the constant changing circumstances. One good phase that I kind of like about global startup companies is that they are organizations that are by nature temporary. They are not permanent organizations. The nature is temporary. And their mission is to find the business model that works globally in their case. You could link that to the survival situation by saying that their mission is to find the way out. That they start by being a temporary group of people with a mission to find the way out, and they haven't discovered that way out yet. And that is the primary mission, really, that these companies need to take care of. This is one of the things that completely kills chances of finding that way out and chances of discovering a great business model. I'm talking about negative control, both in the leadership of the company, if the manager or the entrepreneur who started the company exercises negative control, or if the society around it exercises negative control over these companies. If there is too much rules and regulations, too much oversight, too much all kinds of hoops and obstacles in the way of these companies, it completely kills the chances of being capable of adapting into change and being capable of embracing change. The companies live in the midst of this chaos, and every day they have to figure out from the changing circumstances what really is the model that we try to make work and what's the next experiment that we are experimenting as a temporary organization following a chain of experiments. But there is something stable and something crystal clear within this chaos, and you can discover it occasionally within the picture, just like this. And I'm talking about goals and objectives. These organizations, these young, ambitious startups, who start with bold ideas, with very potential ideas, and dream of conquering the world, they often have very clear visions. They know exactly what kind of end results, what kind of goals they would like to reach, what really is their target. That really isn't the problem. The target is very well known. It's just that the route to reach the target is not known. And the route is filled with chaos and changing circumstances. One of the things that these companies always have to focus on is being different. And they usually are different. They are usually fundamentally different, doing things in a holistic, very different way than the competitors around them. If a startup is not different, unfortunately, nobody will ever even notice the company and nobody will give the company any chances. If you establish a new teleoperator, for example, that looks completely like all the other teleoperators, has the same products, has the same pricing, who's going to favor the new guy? Pretty much nobody. People will always choose the trusted existing brand. So what I'm saying is that differentiation strategy is one of the key things that these young companies need to focus on, and often they have all the elements to do so because by the very nature they are fundamentally different. They can even be so different that they are memorably different and a little bit quirky. They can be the weird guy in the room. And being this different is actually better than being just plain vanilla, being gray and not noticed at all. So even being the weird guy at the party is better than being invisible. And these companies often use some interesting scientific methods and some actual science in how they experiment, how they learn, and how they try to find the way out in the middle of all that chaos. And one of the best models that I've seen comes from Stanford's Steve Blank, and the model is called Customer Development Model. And the whole idea with that model is simply to follow the kind of experimentation that you do tightly in cooperation together with customers. And you take in a whole lot of feedback on what works and what doesn't work, and you iterate constantly. That model, as a principle, as a process, is based on the work done by the Pentagon's Department of Math Scientists, the group known as DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Project Agencies. For a couple of decades, this group of people has discovered things like the GPS, the internet, microchip miniaturization, for example. And many of these discoveries have been achieved following a similar kind of model, involving the customers, talking to customers, constantly experimenting, constantly failing, constantly learning, constantly coping with the changing circumstances. So that is the science behind how to build these companies from ground up. Having these kind of blueprints and business plans and focusing on the traditional science of business planning is often actually very counterproductive to these companies. Perhaps they write business plans, but they write business plans more as a mental exercise, as kind of a way of clarifying their vision. And once the business plan is written, they often scrap it, throw it away, because it really represents a fantasy version of reality, some kind of dream that has no connection with reality and is certainly not going to happen precisely as they dreamed it. It's useful as a mental exercise, but really bad as a day-to-day guide on how to find your way out of the chaos. Many companies that have secured funding that I've also been involved with have not actually written a business plan at all. And nowadays there are some enlightened venture capitalists or enlightened business angels, often outside Finland, unfortunately, who don't expect companies to submit business plans to them. They would much rather talk with the entrepreneurs, talk with the team, hear about the vision, hear about the systems, and hear about the whole ideas that the team has been developing, and make their investment decisions based on that, and not require the entrepreneurs to enter the world of fantastic literature and write these fictional business plans at all. And this is an interesting kind of shift, that when I started more than 10 years ago, this really wasn't the case, that everybody back then expected entrepreneurs to write business plans. And still the traditional science, of course, follows that path quite strictly. Tries to build global business creation as a kind of deterministic science with strong causalities of planning and following the plan and then producing the results. And this necessarily isn't true. That's not the way how it's done typically. This is the way how it's done. It's done through iterations, having multiple spinning cycles that go faster and faster and faster. And once you iterate enough, once you try, fail, and occasionally succeed 1,000 times, eventually the chances are starting to get pretty high that you will reach something brilliant at the top. And if you do this together with customers, the chances are even higher that you will eventually reach something really magnificent in the end. So, in a way, I'm saying that mostly entering this kind of cyclone of figuring your way out of chaos is strongly a question of attitude. It's a question of perspectives, that you just have to dare to take that jump and abandon some of the ways of traditional business planning, use only the useful parts and ignore the non-useful parts, and then see how you can find the way out yourself. It requires different kind of leadership from the entrepreneur than traditional leadership. You can't just lead processes and lead matters and lead the details, but you actually have to really lead the people in much more expedition survival situation kind of basis. So it's an attitude question. And I really think that you shouldn't just study startup entrepreneurship. It's an extreme sport, and you really need to do it to be able to understand it a little bit better. And if you plan on building these global businesses from ground up, you don't necessarily need the best education in the world. I've graduated from the Aalto School of Economics, first in academic standing of my class, but I'm a rare exception really with my startup entrepreneurship peers, that many of them don't have academic education necessarily at all, or it's at lower levels. And of course, we all know these famous stories about Bill Gates and other people who are educated as high school dropouts. Instead of needing the best education in the world, you could probably need the best education for the world. And in this, the world of thought differs a little bit. Usually when we start in school, it's true in this country and probably true in many other countries, we get taught in a certain kind of way, that at least the Finnish school system often focuses on producing students that are basically problem solvers. They can solve problems, they can calculate, they can do the job of a computer or a pocket calculator, and they can solve problems much in the same way that any other nationality can solve problems. That we are, in a way, replicating the same model here in Finland in education that many other countries such as China, India, and others use. And we think that perhaps if we educate a little bit more engineers in the same way, that we can somehow survive in the competition against the Chinese and the Indians. But sorry, that's not the case. We can't win by volume. We should do something different. And in a way, this old paradigm of teaching students to become problem solvers, that is a lot like bloodletting. That bloodletting used to be a medieval medical practice that was supposed to help you with a lot of different kind of medical conditions. But actually it was discovered that it's not useful at all, it's only harmful. And even after this discovery, it was still taught in European universities for many decades before finally vanishing away from the teachings. And this is a picture of an old bloodletting textbook from some Central European university. And we are now stuck in the old ways of teaching people to become problem solvers and just replicating that, even though we know that that's not the model how you are most successful in building these companies. The model would actually be problem defining. So moving from problem solving to problem defining. And unfortunately, the first time typically when a student is really asked to define a problem is when the student does his or her doctoral thesis. This is really the first time when a serious question is proposed that define a new problem, define something new. And in problem definition, I'm talking about the capability of observing a very broad set of data. Abstract data, some of it quantitative, some of it qualitative, seeing wide variations of different things, maybe statistics, maybe test results, maybe hearsay, maybe interviews, maybe intuition, and out of all this broad set of data, defining a new problem. Saying that actually this is a better problem to solve. Actually, the whole systemic problem boils down to this. This is the most valuable point that we should concentrate on. Making these kind of definitions. And nowadays, students are not being taught to act in this manner, even though it would be possible to arrange exams that would have huge materials present at the exam circumstances, and then the exam would be graded on two questions. Out of the material, define what is the problem. This counts for 90% of your grade. And then the next question is, what is the solution to the problem that you just defined? This counts for 10% of your grade. And you could do exams like this starting from kindergarten upwards and really educate people to become problem definers instead of just becoming replicators of pocket calculators in terms of being problem solvers. There's a funny experiment that a couple of people have done, especially in the US and the UK, that involves paper clips. That they've taken people and given them blank sheets of paper and a pen and asked them to write down as many uses they can possibly think of for a paper clip. And typically the people come up with maybe 12, maybe 14, sometimes 15 uses. And at this point they typically run out of ideas on what to write down in there. But however, there is a group of people who consistently discover or write down more than 200 uses for a paperclip. 98% of this group of people always writes down more than 200 uses for a paperclip. And the group of people that I'm talking about is kindergarten kids. The kids don't have any restrictions in their thinking, in their creative divergent thinking. They are not yet taught in this deductive thinking way that we are taught. That the school system teaches us that we need to start solving a problem with a set of possible answers. And then through deductive thinking, we deduct the answers step by step by step until finally we have the one and only true answer that the teacher wants to hear. And the kindergarten kids are not yet taught in this way. They can come up with 200 uses for a paperclip because they use divergent thinking. They expand what the question could mean and what could be the variations and the different ways of interpreting the question differently. So the kids typically, they write down that paper clips are a wonderful ingredient in baking. Just stuff hands full of them in muffins and you'll have great muffins. Completely valid answer. They also write down answers that redefine what really is the question and what really is the paper clip. They write down that, okay, the paperclip is the size of the galaxy and planets float inside of it. People live in there. It's 300 feet tall, made of rubber, and water sprints out of little holes that are fixed to this site. Completely valid answers again. They might write down that the paperclip is made out of lava. Again, a new definition, moving into the immaterial world altogether. They've made these tests to people of various ages and education levels. And typically kindergarten kids, they can reach 200 uses for paper clips. Kids in elementary school, they can define about 75-100 uses. High school kids are typically down to 35. And by the time we are graduated from university, we are stuck or left with 15 uses. So there is something in the education system and the way we have traditionally been taught that bit by bit destroys our way of our capability of divergent thinking, how we can expand our views and how we can seek new solutions. And why this is important is that the problem defining divergent thinking way is a very entrepreneurial way. Whoever defines a new problem practically immediately owns it and owns all the business of solving that problem that he just defined. And this is the thinking that often leads to better results, that when these young companies are spinning in that iterative cycle, trying to seek the way out, being a problem definer, being a divergent thinker usually gets you out of there a lot faster than being a deductive thinker with only the capability of solving problems and never defining them. There is one exception in the academia that does teach this capability a little bit, and that's medical doctors. And they typically get taught in this regard because they need to make a diagnosis of the patient. Veterinarian doctors even need to diagnose animals who can't speak or animals who are unconscious. And in these kind of circumstances, you need the capability of defining a problem. You need to take some tests, maybe poke around a little bit in the patient's body and listen to what the patient says, read some old records. And out of all this abstract information, you need to define a problem. What really is the diagnosis? But there are not that many other exceptions in the academia who get taught in this way. There might be one more, and that could perhaps be the military. That some of the teachings that the military teaches, especially to small special operations teams, for example, they are much closer to this kind of divergent thinking, problem-defining way of thought. That these teams, they really need to cope with chaos, that they only have some mission with primary objectives, but pretty much everything else can go horribly wrong. A bomb can explode, and all of a sudden they are in the middle of a situation where you can't afford to go back and write business plans on how you plan to go around that situation. You need to act and think on your feet. And some of the techniques that they teach can really be valuable for startups as well. This kind of sums it up. So instead of using the traditional academic qualifications and the traditional methods, that there could perhaps be some new kind of competencies that are more important in growing global growth businesses than the traditional ones. People would need competence in interpreting meaning, in defining meaning of different events, different facts, different observations. They would need relational competence, both like human relational in this sense, but also in relation of different things to each other. Change competence, coping with change, managing change, surviving change, and action competence, how to act. And all these four, and possibly some more besides these four, they really become the new academic qualifications for a successful global business entrepreneur. And I think that we are still a little bit distant from this kind of vision and thinking. That the only really kind of solid academic program that I've seen that approaches this kind of thinking a little bit, I found in Denmark, and it's called Chaos Pilot, and it's a program that teaches students to navigate and survive in the middle of chaos and think of business ideas, problem definitions, use their creativity to get things sorted out, solved, and they have a really different view of the future. So instead of thinking with causalic terms, they often think more with the terms that are in line with the effectuation theory. If you know, are familiar with the effectuation theory. But the effectuation theory often it has a different view of the world, thinking that we can, the world is our oyster, and by our own actions we can make something realize in objective reality that wouldn't otherwise be there. And this is precisely the way that a startup entrepreneur should think, and makes him more successful than following traditional methods. I think I'm soon running out of time, so I'm going to stop at this. Thank you.